committee will come to order.
The first item we're going to take up is Senator Rest's bill, Senate File 2735.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I have the A2 delete all amendment.
Senator Rest moves the A2 author's amendment.
That's correct.
So all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Oh, and the motion prevails. The A2 amendment is adopted. Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 2735 broadly speaking, does three things. It expands the state's commitment to providing employment opportunities for people with a severe disability. It strengthens the procedures for making state agencies aware of the legislature's commitment to this, and it also requires the Department of Administration to track the state's progress. We've been asking that the Department of Administration and other departments to do that in a number of hearings today, and to report annually on the number and value of the contracts that are awarded to eligible organizations. And the problem has been that there's been very little data that's available to show how the state has been successful in that commitment, even though the commitment has been made, quite frankly, over and over again. The advocates for the bill and the Department of Administration have been working to find mutually agreeable language in the bill to represent that commitment and the notification requirements. And so that the work of Mr. Rhodes from the Department of Administration and the advocates have produced the delete everything amendment, and would like to take some brief testimony from the advocates, but the committee can be assured that there's no opposition from the state agencies on the bill.
Great. Thank you, Senator Rest. And your first testifier, if you could please state your name and who you represent for the record.
My name is John Tripp, and I am retired, but until recently I was executive director of Tasks Unlimited. TASC is a nonprofit organization with 40 years of success employing people with disabilities in a variety of capacities, including janitorial work, which is one of the fields covered by this bill. TASC has a lot of private janitorial customers. We also do business with governmental units. In the 30s, the federal government recognized the need for direct set-aside contracting procedures with organizations that employ disabled people, and that federal system is very effective. Most states in the union also have systems which are effective. Many Minnesota counties and municipalities in Minnesota have effective systems, and TASC does business with several of those. Oddly, the state of Minnesota lags behind in this area, and I think that this bill should eliminate the remaining barriers for Minnesota to catch up and be able to do direct set-aside contracting, and I think that would be a great idea to pass that.
Thank you.
I'm Clayton Lind. I'm the vice president of the Occupational Development Center, and I'm also a co-chair of the Macro Association's Legislative Committee. As you know, the last few years, the economy has been very bad for everybody, and it has a couple of different effects on us because we depend on all the other businesses for job opportunities for our individuals, as well as opportunities to get subcontract work. But we also have a reliance on some county and state funding, which, of course, everybody knows there's being cuts made. So it is more important than ever that the state step forward to support this initiative so that we can ensure that individuals with disabilities continue to find jobs and have the opportunity to become as self-sufficient as possible. We've been working with Mr. Rhodes from the Department of Admin and his staff, and we've found some good language that we both agree on, and I think that this bill should not be controversial at all, and it would be very helpful to organizations such as ourselves.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Lind. And let
Mr.
me ask
Chairman,
you at this
we,
time if there's any
like
questions
that,
from
that
committee
the,
members.
That the bill strikes a balance between accountability and practicality.
Any questions from committee members? Yes.
Chair,
Senator Rest, on 1.7 and 1.8, is there any provision in there for like document shredding? Would that be something that would be should be maybe listed under here?
Document scanning.
Mr. Chairman, it could be.
I asked that because I believe from up in Isanti, there's a group that had been coming down to the Department of Administration, and I think they were doing more than just imaging. I think they were doing some shredding also. Mm.
Is Mr. Rhodes in the room?
Right in the back.
That would be fine. Senator Olsen, if you would like to add that.
Senator Olsen, maybe you could tell us what line and what change you'd like
to make.
You could
add it after imaging on line 1-7. You could say document shredding, semicolon.
Okay. So I just want to make sure everybody understands. So on line 117, Senator Olsen.
1-7. 1.7.
I'm sorry. 1.7.
We're adding another activity that they could have contracts for.
Okay. And I just want to make sure community members know you're adding document shredding after document imaging.
Mr. Chair, does it also go on 1.16 as well, too?
Thanks, Senator Bethel.
And if Senator Olsen wants to incorporate that into his amendment, it looks like it'd be on line 116 after document imaging and also document shredding, semicolon. So it'd be on lines 1.7 and 1.16. The committee members understand the amendments?
So all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
And the Olsen amendment prevails.
Other questions from other members?
Seeing none, Senator Rest, is there? Let me ask if there's anybody in the audience that wants to speak in favor or opposition to this bill.
Seeing none,
Senator Rest, then I'm not sure the destination is this to the floor, Senator Rest. It is.
Yes.
Okay, Senator Rest, then
moves that Senate File 2735 as amended be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. All those in favor of that motion, say aye.
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 And the motion prevails. Did I get it all? Yeah.
Chris, I adjourn this meeting tonight.
What's that?
Adjourn this meeting.
Oh, because we're going to reconvene.
Okay.
Yep. And there being no further bills on this particular agenda, I believe I'm sorry, we're going to be adjourning this and then
recess.
Immediately reconvening.
Recess. Recess.
Recess.
There's two meetings.
You may adjourn the committee.
So the committee is adjourned.
We recessed
okay.
earlier. Now we're starting a new meeting.
Okay. Do not we have a quorum? One, two,
yes,
three.
Yes, we have a quorum.
Okay.
Do?
I hope so.
Yeah, we do.
State and Local Government Operations and Oversight Committee will come to order. We have two bills on the evening hearings agenda. The first one is Senator Salzman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm here today with Senate File 2476. I want to just thank you for hearing this bill first. I know you have a full agenda tonight. And while this is a very small bill, it's very significant to our community because it involves our Stillwater American Legion and the use of its building. It relates to a change in gambling law that was made in around 2002 or 2003 that changed the language so that a building must be wholly owned and that no part could be used for a for-profit purpose if they were to use charitable gambling proceeds to pay for the utilities on the building. That includes water, sewer, electricity, et cetera. In this particular case, the building that houses the American Legion has two apartments on top, and that rent has been very important to the use of this building. And the American Legion in our community has a very special place. And I have to share with you that this past summer when the three soldiers from the 34th Division, Stillwater Military Police, who are based at the Armory, were killed, they had already planned to have a pancake breakfast on Sunday morning that all the families who were raising money to purchase blankets for all the returning troops, had planned this meeting. And when the it was announced that our three soldiers were killed, it really became a much larger event. And I was down there with Lieutenant Colonel O'Reilly. We were helping to serve pancakes and eggs, and it was a wonderful place because it really was a place for our community to gather. And I just want to thank the American Legion for, you know, bringing this to our attention. I wish we had known about it sooner so we could have addressed it. But at this time, Mr. Robert Lee Hart, who is the post adjutant for the American Legion Post 48, is here to tell you just a little bit about this bill and why it's so important to them.
Welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself, please, for the record.
Madam Chair, my name is Robert Hart, and I'm the post adjutant for American Legion Post 48 in Stillwater, Minnesota. Our post was chartered in 1922, and we've occupied our current facility since 1957. We have two apartments above the Legion Hall, which until about 2 years ago provided workforce housing for people trying to establish their financial footing and also veterans in transition. Affordable housing units under $800 are a rare commodity indeed, but especially in Stillwater's historical district. One of our current members, now 60, recalls living above the Legion with his family as a child. That's how long we've had these apartments in place. Our ability to fulfill our objective of service to veterans and the broader community rests on three revenue streams: post food and beverage sales, apartment rent, and charitable gambling. We've been challenged by the smoking ban because we are a border city with Wisconsin. Purchases have been affected by a difficult economy, which also affects our pull tab sales. But the loss of rent revenue has been our biggest challenge. Changes in language of the charitable gambling laws force us to take our apartments out of service and have threatened our financial viability. Other posts and organizations in other communities, including Shakopee, Chaska, Mankato, and others, are impacted as well. The bill before this committee addresses this issue. My compliments to Senator Saltzman, the Gambling Control Board, and others who have come together to craft this bill. The bill also has the support of allied charities, to whom we are also grateful. We enthusiastically encourage passage of Senate File 2476. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Did you want to testify, sir?
Madam Chair, my name is Gary Danger with the Gambling Control Board. If there was any questions, I was
okay.
Here to help.
Okay, so you're here for any questions. Are there any questions or comments for Senator Saltzman or her witness? Seeing none, Senator Lori moves that Senate File 2476 be recommended to pass. All who may be in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Saltzman. Senator Sparks.
And thank you very much, Madam Chair.
I guess we're waiting for Senator Sparks. When we hear the Rossino bill, by the way, folks, there are more people interested than there are chairs in this room. There are TVs, I'm told, by the sergeant's office out in the hallway, and there are also TVs that are on down in the cafeteria. The cafeteria is not open for business, but there are TVs down there so that people don't have to stand in the hall if they would prefer to sit. And we're certainly more than willing to have every chair in the room filled, however. So if there is a chair that is empty next to you, maybe you could raise your hand if you know that nobody's sitting in it. Okay, I guess we're full. The way, Senator Sparks, we're ready for you. The way the author and opponents and proponents understand the hearing is going to go, Senator Sparks will be given opportunity to present his bill, and then we will have 45 minutes for the proponents to speak and 45 minutes for opponents to speak. My legislative aide will be the timekeeper. The time, if there are questions, However, that will not, from members, that will not be counted against your witnesses' time to speak or the opponent's time to speak. Following the testimony, if there are amendments or further discussion, we will take it up at that time and then have a vote on the bill. And I think everybody understands that this is a very common way for us to proceed on bills that have a lot of interest in them. Welcome to the committee, Senator Sparks. We're pleased to hear your presentation on Senate File 2950.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity to be here today. I know that you've had a long agenda, but do obviously appreciate the opportunity to be able to present Senate File 2950 to you this evening. Everyone in this room understands that the state is facing a very difficult budget situation. We are here tonight to offer what we believe is a potential solution. This is a unique idea that has the potential to infuse millions of dollars into the state at a time when we need it the most. The bill will capture a revenue source for Minnesotans who are happy to contribute to it at a time when fees and property taxes are increasing. The bill proposes an alternative and, I've highlighted, voluntary option to raising revenue. The revenue source provided by the bill will be a reoccurring source, and I think that we owe it to all Minnesotans to have an honest discussion about this innovative idea at the Capitol, and that's why I would really like to thank you, Madam Chair, and members of this committee for allowing us to have the hearing tonight and to discuss the issue. There recently was a poll conducted on March 5th of 2010 that showed that 80% of Minnesotans now favor racinos at Minnesota's two racetracks, being Canterbury and Running Aces. At least 25 other states are considering expanding their casino and gaming operations in hope of filling budget gaps caused by recessions. Kentucky governor wants slot machines at racetracks. Maine is considering new tables and games in video gambling. And Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell says the state's new law allowing games like poker and blackjack in casinos will provide $140 million in 2011, saving the jobs of 1,000 state workers. The main reason, Madam Chair and members, I agreed to be a chief author on this racino bill this year is that a few miles across the Iowa border, just south of Albert Lea, the district that I'm honored and privileged to represent, on Interstate 35W, there's a Iowa state-run casino called Diamond Joe's Casino. And I'm here to tell you folks that we're losing a lot of money to the state of Iowa. I'd be willing to take you or anyone from St. Paul or anyone from around the state of Minnesota down to Diamond Joe Casino at any time and any day, and I'll guarantee you that over 60% of the license plates in that parking lot will have Minnesota license plates on it. So that's the big reason for me doing this. You know, we used to kind of laugh and joke being a border community when we'd cross over into Iowa, and we'd kind of laugh at their roads and their schools and some of the things that go on down there, but we certainly aren't laughing anymore. Their roads are much improved. Their schools are thriving. Their infrastructure is growing, and they give every one of their students upon graduation thousands of dollars to go on to higher education in their colleges and university. And so I think that this is the right thing to do. The infrastructure is in place at these two facilities. It's a safe, fun atmosphere that you can take people and enjoy the environment. The benefits are major. Obviously, to the ag community, you're going to hear some more of that in our testimony for those that supply the hay and the feed. If you've been to Canterbury or Running Aces, that stable area is almost a city of itself, and the horse industry as a whole would benefit in large part by this provision. The bill provides for regulation by the Racing Commission, which presently regulates all gaming and other activities presently at the tracks. The bill creates the Jobs, Family, and Economic Development Fund, which provide funding for five major areas. They are agriculture and rural development, early childhood development and family education, that I know myself and many members of this committee are very supportive of. I think we've heard from many economists for every dollar that we put into early childhood education, we get a $17 return on that investment, and so that's obviously an important area. We also put money into an area of research and development for the biosciences and medical technology businesses and opportunities in employment. Also, athletic, recreational, and extracurricular activities and programs to help stimulate capital improvements in employment, and finally some money to the general fund. The bill will allow video game wagering at the racetracks, which will allow the horse racing industry to compete with other states that have already done this, Madam Chair. And so with that, I'd like to hand it over to our testifiers to give you some more information. I think, Mr. Weed, are you going to start?
Yep.
Senator Sparks, we're going to do a time check for you so okay. that you will know. And what time is it now? Ms. Brenda Schaefer-Pellinen has a stopwatch, so we'll setting it at 45 minutes okay. when your first testifier begins.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
And again, we'll not include questions from members. Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Thank you very much. I'm Randy Widener. I'm president of the Minnesota Quarter Horse Racing Association. I'm a lifelong Minnesota resident and a taxpayer and a horseman. I've grown up in Minnesota 4-H, Little Britches Rodeo, High School Rodeo, and many professional groups and associations of different disciplines of showing horses, rodeo, and horse racing over the last 25 years. Now I serve as the president of the Minnesota Quarter Horse Racing Association. The quarter horse racing is strong with national increases in purses, added money, earnings per starter, and a handle that dipped only a fraction of a percentage with the poor economic climate of 2009. With quarter horse racing leading the field, doing better than racing overall, I want to be able to keep and grow our share as we have been racing quarter horses in the state long before pari-mutuel wagering. When Canterbury opened in 1985, we began racing in Shakopee. Pari-mutuel wagering was the only game in town to bet on. After racing came pull tabs, bingo, lottery, casino slots, and cards. The racino is an evolution of a playing field that is necessary to maintain the competitive edge to keep horse racing industry alive here in Minnesota. This is an industry made up of many small owner-operator businesses at the racetrack and across the state supporting each other and the horses. Minnesota is full of horsemen breeding horses, come from all corners of the state and close into the metro area. Horses are a statewide billion-dollar industry, according to a University of Minnesota study. Passing this Racino bill will not only grow the industry, but stop its current exodus down Interstate 35, as horsemen are leaving Minnesota for more profitable areas with Racinos. When the same horses we raise and race here in Minnesota can train for the same or less and race for three times more of the purse money just a few hours south in Iowa or half a day's drive in Oklahoma, there's not much besides Canterbury's wonderful facility, Minnesota's adoring race fans, or our perfect summer weather to keep the connections around here. From a business decision, it's hard to keep raising and racing our horses here in the land of 10,000 lakes, but some of us true Minnesotans are fighting for our future here. For years now, Minnesota's horsemen have been migrating south to these forward-thinking states with the Racinos. For a race or two at first to start off, and then when the payday hits the bank, these horses stay where the purses are. Not only do we lose the race-age horses, but we lose the mares, the stallions, and the foals that go along, too, for the breeders' monies, which are considerably more lucrative. Prairie Meadows in Altoona, Iowa, and several Racino racetracks in Oklahoma, including Remington Park, regularly draw our owners, horses, trainers, jockeys, grooms, blacksmiths, veterinarians, and other personnel away from Canterbury and our state's economy. We, all of us, you and me, Minnesotans, we're not alone with our horse industry leeching away. There was an interesting article in the Speed Horse magazine last month where Kentucky tracks have asked for 25% fewer dates this year compared to 2009. Kentucky, the mecca of horse racing. The reason for the reduced races in Kentucky, the expansion of slots in Indiana and Pennsylvania. The horsemen are leaving the bluegrass of Kentucky for greener grass at the neighboring states with the Racinos. In our neighboring state of Iowa, Prairie Meadows Racetrack, along with their Racino and the breeding industry, are prospering. Within 5 years of the Racino's inception, the Jockey Club of America called Iowa one of the fastest growing breeding states in the country. Even with competing reservation, riverboat, and other casinos, visitors and revenue at Prairie Meadows Racetrack in Altoona have climbed annually. Prairie Meadows in the Des Moines metro area, with a population of less than 500,000, recently hit a milestone of $1 billion to the state through taxes, grants, charitable donations, and recently signed a $10,000 check to the Leukemia Society. This is 240 miles from Shakopee. It's an easy commute for our horsemen to leave for the Racino benefits. Failure to pass this Racino bill spells the end of live horse racing in Minnesota and the thousands of existing jobs, as well as the thousands of new jobs that the Racino brings, along with healthy growing horse race industry. A big deal is made about the potential passing and signing of the bonding bill and its jobs. But when the bonding bill runs out, the jobs disappear, and we're still stuck with the bill. The Racino adds thousands of permanent jobs at no cost to the state of Minnesota while adding new, new desperately needed revenue to the state. The amount of people, the businesses, and financial impact affected by the racing industry can be measured into looking at what it takes to raise just one racehorse. Start with the farm, the supplies, the stores that sell the equipment, the feed, the horses, growing the hay, the grain, the supplements, deliveries to the farm, realtors, accountants, insurance agents, bankers, etc. The pickup truck, the tractor, the implement dealers, horse trailer dealers, the mechanics and tire shops, then the stallions and mares and the breeding farm come into the picture. Transportation, vet clinic and clinicians to facilitate ultrasounds and breedings. 3 long years of upkeep with good luck and almost 1 full year with the mare carrying the baby. Round the clock watch for that baby to be foaled in a heated barn. We can add the propane dealer to our list. 2 more years of growing injury-free. The vet will be out several times. It always happens. Keep counting down 2 years, feeding and caring for it before the whole horse is old enough to train. Keep mending the fence, ordering gravel to fill in the muddy drive, and plowing the snow away. We're looking at 5 tons of grain into 1 racehorse at this point, which is a lot of coffee can scoops at 2 to 3 times a day, not to mention the alfalfa or the hay. Trips to the equipment store, saddle shop, farrier visits, people that have their bank accounts involved with this one racehorse keep adding up. Train the horse to be ridden, transportation to the farm, or hire an employee to ride them while they're trained well enough to go to the racetrack, more trailer or van rides to the track, pay the driver, use your own gas time and vehicle expenses, make it to the track now, pay the trainer who pays the groom, the hot walker, the exercise rider, now the farrier, blacksmith, vet, chiropractor bills, they all come from a different place now from people that are working at the racetrack. Now you look to enter your race, and if you want to drive 3 more hours south to Altoona, you can race for 3 times the purse. Do you move your farm? Many people are. With 80% of the citizens of Minnesota in favor of Racino, why can't we get this done?
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me tonight. My name is Corey Merrifield, and I'm founder of the grassroots effort SaveTheVikes.org, which is a fan effort dedicated to finding a Viking stadium solution. So I'll give you guys all 3 guesses as to why I'm here tonight, but you really only need one, and that's to talk about the athletic and recreational portion of the bill that Senator Sparks has put in front of you here tonight. As a result of our efforts, many of you have received emails from Vikings fans over wildcard weekend early in January asking for your help on finding a stadium solution to keep the Vikings here in Minnesota. Now, we've lost teams before due to the lack of action on stadium issues, the Lakers and the North Stars, only to pay hundreds of millions more to bring replacement teams back to Minnesota years later. Over the last few decades, the state of Minnesota has profited well from professional sports. According to the Metropolitan Sports Facilities Commission, the state of Minnesota has made $450 million on a $50 million investment. Today, we are proposing a bill that could help keep the Vikings from leaving Minnesota without a tax increase. Other markets and NFL owners are closely watching what you, the legislature, does to resolve the stadium issue this session. If nothing is solved by the end of the session, it is open season by the NFL and the Majestic Group from LA to come in and attempt to take the Vikings away from Minnesota. Senator Betzold? So I don't need to tell you that Minnesota is in desperate need of job creation. Additionally, the labor trades have the highest unemployment at 25%. Between building a stadium and the Racino bill put forward today by Senator Sparks, these two opportunities create over 20,000 contract and job opportunities for the state of Minnesota and have well over a $1 billion economic output. Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, you have an opportunity here to help preserve a cultural icon and a piece of Minnesota's economic and employment engine. The consequence of inaction leads to loss of jobs in the hospitality, entertainment, and agricultural industries. I know the arguments out there, so let's clear the air and try to find some common ground. Opposers say Minnesota is not looking to expand gambling. Gambling is here. Gambling is not going to go away. You can currently walk into 18 casinos in the state of Minnesota and play slot machines. You can walk into any gas station and convenience store and gamble. You can walk into racetracks and gamble on races and other forms of gambling allowed in existing Minnesota casinos. This bill is simply asking to put slot machines that are already played in the state of Minnesota in existing places of business whose main revenue source is legalized gambling. It is not new to the state. It is not a new facility. Therefore, it is not an expansion. Furthermore, my research has shown that it does not violate any compact or take away from Native American casinos' existing form of business. And if we still can't agree on this, I put this before the committee to consider. On January 31st of 2010, not even 2 months ago, Minnesota introduced a new form of gambling called Mega Millions. I have spoken with the director over at the Minnesota State Lottery, and he said the state considers lottery gambling. Furthermore, he went on to say that they need to hire 2 to 3 people to help with administrating this new form of gambling, and that 50% of the gross profits from Mega Millions go to facilitating that lottery. Now, if that isn't enough, the Minnesota State Lottery will be introducing 45 to 50 new scratch-off games this year. If we aren't expanding gambling, why are we introducing new forms of it not even 60 days ago and ongoing in 2010? So is it that we aren't expanding gambling, or aren't we expanding gambling that counteracts lobbying by the casinos? It is estimated Racino can generate $125 to $140 million annually. The Vikings are asking for $40 million over 15 years to help with the stadium. The $25 million proposed in this bill would certainly help get them there. According to the RSM McGladrey Financial Report, a new stadium would generate $36 to $40 million annually in direct tax revenue. This would be a way to generate a user-based elective tax revenue that helps not only keep a cultural and economic asset like the Vikings, but it can also help with the state deficit, education, agriculture industry, and medical research. In closing, you, the committee, have an opportunity to put to vote a stadium deficit solution that will generate millions more for years to come while putting 20,000 people to work. Now, I know you have the best lobbyists in the world trying to influence you, but I asked the committee this very question that was asked the public last week. What is more important to Minnesota? 20,000 jobs and keeping the Vikings and paying down the state deficit, or the lobbying dollars to the state legislature? Just last week, Survey USA showed overwhelming support publicly for Racino from the citizens of Minnesota. Senator Sparks alluded to it earlier at 80%. Furthermore, Minnesota Democrats are the largest supporters of Racino at 84% in favor of them. I'm curious to see if the constituents' wishes today will be reflected in their Democratic leadership. I've done some analysis that suggests lobbying efforts and contributions to the DFL from Native American casinos are largest during elections years. We all know that this is an election year. So it begs the question, are the lobbying dollars from the casinos preventing Democratic leadership from supporting their constituents' desire to see a Racino solution? Now, I suspect if the Senate committee here today put Racino into action, those lobbying dollars are not at risk. So I ask you, please, and sincerely, to support this bill, because supporting this bill means jobs, it means support for the farmers of Minnesota, and it helps keep the Vikings in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next?
Good evening. My name is Jeff Hilger. I own Blue Valley Farm. It's a thoroughbred breeding farm in Stillwater, Minnesota. I look around the room and I see a bunch of people that I talked to 10, 15 years ago about the same subject. I was a member of the HPBA, was vice president for 10 years, and I was very, very involved in trying to get something like we're trying to do again through about 10, 12 years ago. Hi, Senator Vickerman. We met a couple times. I wanted to let you know what's really happening in the industry, because I'm a big part of this industry. I've been breeder of the year many years. I've had horse of the year many years. I've been very successful. I've been very blessed in my life in horse racing and other things, business, I've done well. But the truth of the matter is, this is the only business that I've ever been in that I was constantly fighting a battle that was impossible to win. Why it's impossible to win? It was always uphill, and there's no way coming down. Because when I was a little boy, my dad told me, he says, just if you want to know what's going on in the world, follow the money. 10 years ago, I followed the money. It was brought up in the last presentation. I don't want to dwell on it. Follow the money, and you'll know why this bill doesn't get anywhere. Basically, the industry, 5 years ago, I had 14 brood mares. I had 47 horses. I've got two. Why do I have two? I can't afford to have any more. It can't work. A $1 billion industry is in dire straits. The state is in dire straits. We have no money, and we're arguing over stupid things. Money. I do realize money rules everything. But the fact of the matter is the only thing that is stopping this state to get $150 million is money. I don't want to go where it's coming from and where it's going, but we all know. To drop to two mares, I at one time was doing roughly $20,000 a year in hay, around $45,000 a year in feed, over $40,000 a year in vet bills. You start adding that up and all the people that that supports, it's a lot of money, it's a lot of people. It's going away, and it's going away fast. It's no longer this slope. When the Sampsons saved us, bailed us out back in the early 90s or whatever it was, we were dying. This thing was not dying. They brought us back to life. We built it up to a point where the legislature was kind enough to give us a card club, and it kind of put our finger in the dike. We weren't drowning. We weren't going anyplace, but we weren't drowning. Well, now all the states around us have seen the light, and they're putting electronic gaming in the racinos, and they're pulling the horsemen away from here. They're pulling the trainers away from here. They're pulling everybody away from here, and the finger in the dike is falling out quickly. And unfortunately, when things die, the last couple days come real quick, and then it's over. We're pretty close to being real quick. In fact, my own opinion, we are real quick. I've run many businesses in my life. I've never, ever had this tough a time getting people to understand the truth. 80% of the people in this state want you to help them pay their debts. We're in debt. We're hurting. I'm not going to say this answers everything, but at least it goes in the right direction. The majority of your constituents want you to do something. I think you want to do something. And I'm so happy. When I used to sit before these committees before, there wasn't a Democrat sitting next to me. There wasn't a Democrat backing the bill in any way, shape, or form. It's getting a little better. We've got a few, and that's why I'm back talking again. I dropped out of this 5 years ago because I gave up. Don't make me give up again. We cannot make it without you. End of discussion. If there's any questions, I'd be very, very happy to answer them.
Madam Chair.
Senator Sparks, I'm just trying to see how much time you have left for your final witness.
Madam Chair, could you admonish the audience?
Yes, I will. Just a second.
Thank you.
Senator Sparks, your witnesses have only used under 18 minutes, so you have plenty of time. And we know that there's a lot of interest in this issue, but applause or clapping or any other kind of noise is just totally inappropriate. Senator Sparks, you understand that?
I agree. Yep, I understand. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I'm Dick Day, president of Racino Now. Racino is not a new thing to me. I've been doing this for about 12 years, and I've been thrown under the bus quite a few years. Let me tell you, the landscape is changing. And the landscape is changing because we're $1 billion in debt this year, state of Minnesota. We're going to be $5 and $6 billion in debt. in 2011 and 12, and Senator Sparks, along with Roebling and Metzen and Langseth and Scheid, are bringing you something that will give you $250 million every 2 years. It will give you thousands of jobs. You just heard it will save horse racing. Now you want to know, what will it do for the Vikings? You know what people ask me when I was a legislator on stadiums? They'd say, Dick, if you use one dime of my tax money to build a stadium, you're out of here. Then you'd go to the next table at the cafe, and the guy'd say, let me tell you something, Dick. If you lose the Twins, that was a time when you lose the Twins, this way, you lose the Vikings, you're toast. You're gone. We're telling people the commodity that's so great in the state of Minnesota, the Vikings, they're a part of us. You can save it. There's nothing. Nothing to it. The money is voluntary by people that go. If you don't like gambling, don't go. Don't go. But my goodness, the time has come for Racino. The time has come. You know, when you talk about jobs, you talk about revenue. Then along comes, and we've been inching our up, and you'll watch it, the poll. We're at 80. If we have to, which I don't want to, we'll come back here and we'll have 90%. There is no place I go talk in the state of Minnesota that 90 or 100% of the people say, Dick, this is a no-brainer. Why can't you get this done? I said, I'm working on it. I'm doing as much as I can. I'm talking every day, 2-3 places, as you can tell by my voice. I'm working on it. We're coming. Minnesotans know what's going on. I'm not going to talk about money and all that stuff. They know it. They're watching what's going to go on in this Capitol this year. And I will tell you what, this summer, they're going to ask questions of everybody. What is the reason that you couldn't do this? I get so aggravated that 4 weeks before Dan Sparks even agreed to a bill, that I am listening to Senator Pogemiller telling it's dead on arrival. Kelleher and Pogemiller said it's dead on arrival. We hadn't even put the bill together yet. I didn't even have an author. I'm going, wow, isn't this interesting? What kind of state is this that you're looking at that somebody says your bill is dead on arrival and you don't even know what's in the bill yet? You're just putting it together. It's not good. It's not good what's happening. And I'll tell you something that I need to talk about. As you well know, we have 18 casinos. As you well know, they pay no taxes. They pay no property taxes. They pay no corporate taxes. I brought it along a picture. A guy named Don Laughlin lives in my home city. This summer, I sat down with him for an hour. I said, Don, what do you think? What's going on? And he says, oh, man. He said, you got a problem. But he says, you know, Dick, there's a lot of money. I said, Don, how much money is there? He says, probably between $800 million and $1.2 billion with no tax money to the state. Net profit. Net profit. You all could ask some questions of people when you hear different who gets how much money and all that stuff. And like I said, I'm not going to get into that. But I'm going to tell you something. Something is seriously wrong when people don't look at this and say, why wouldn't you want to do this? We got schools that need money. We got roads. We got people on health care problems. We got all of these problems in the state. And here we come and we sit and we say, gosh, you know what? There's a bunch of people that want to voluntarily give you their money. There could be a bus. And it leaves Owatonna, Minnesota. One out of every five would go to Canterbury or Running Aces. And we're saying, no, can't do it. Gosh, we wouldn't want to do that. Well, I'll tell you. You think of what I just said about the money. Something else that I thought was interesting. I went to Ward Innes and I said, Ward, you know, how does the revenues work on sales tax, liquor tax, tobacco tax, gas tax? He says, well, Dick, what we do is we collect it. We collect $19 million, and then we send back $17 million to the casinos. I said, Ward, now wait a minute. If the people buy their gas and they pay a tax, or the local Super 8 down here, he charges a lodging tax and they charge a lodging tax. No, he said, we send it back. The state is broke. And we're saying, and I have that if you want to know that. The next thing you'll hear is you'll hear people talk about, oh, gosh, gambling is really going under now. Have you heard that? Gambling is going under. By the way, we're just invested $21 million up in Bemidji. We're opening up a new place, but gambling's really going under. You know, this is kind of one of these things. I pick up the Sunday paper. You see $9 billion? It isn't a gambling establishment, but it's going into Las Vegas. It was in the Sunday paper. $8, $9 billion? Do you think they think gambling's going under? Is this going to be the new Miami Beach or Cancun or something? No. People go out there because they like to gamble. You know, I also hear people say, well, expansion of gambling. You've heard this story, folks, so many times, expansion of gambling. You all know that on any night at 18 casinos, when I first started this, we had 8,000 slot machines. We now have tripled it. At any one night, there can be a semi backed up unloading 100 or 200. None of you people know. Nobody knows. And you know what? Nobody cares. I don't even care. I don't want Native American money. I don't want to break any compacts. I don't want any of that. Just level the playing field. Let somebody else be able to compete. So when somebody wants to go gamble tomorrow night, they can go wherever they want. I will tell you something. You will find that Minnesotans would like that. Minnesotans are fair people. All they want is a little competition. You know, the other thing that gets me is people say, well, the expansion and, you know, that's always. And then along comes some, I call them the goody two-shoes. The goody two-shoes. How many people gamble? My goodness, lottery, pull tabs, bingo, whatever. You know, probably about 90% of the people do something during a year. And if they don't, the local church is probably raffling off a car. But then somebody says, oh, now we got problem gambling. 85% of problem gambling comes from casinos. It's already there. Nobody's going to wake up tomorrow morning and become addicted to gambling because we have one more place to go, because we're expanded it so much in the last 10 or 12 years that I've been here. They got so many places to go already. So I don't never buy into that. But it's, you know what? It's always been Racino. We're going to cause a lot of problems. We're going to cause a lot of problems for these horse guys that are losing their farms. We're not going to cause problems for around the entire state of Minnesota, where you all know how much agriculture means and our horse farms, and if we can get more people riding horses and doing things. And then along comes, you know, 80%. I mean, I don't even want to mention that, but in the poll, you can read it. You know what? Hey, and I was a legislator here for 19 years. I take great pride in doing that. A lot of you people are my very good friends, and I loved it here, and I like you guys. But you know what? Approval rating, maybe I got out when I was going as good, is 25% for legislators. It's 80% for Racino. The same poll, the same people are doing the numbers. Then the next thing is people are going to tell you gambling isn't as good, and I just wanted to share with you that I have the records from 2007 to 2008 at places that have Racinos. Keep in mind, both places that we're proposing have 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week gambling now. 12 states have Racinos. They give those states $2.5 billion. From 2007 to 2008, it went up 16%. And the number of employees went from 27,000 to 29,000 at those Racinos. Good paying jobs. And by the way, at Canterbury, they would be one of the few casinos that I know where the owner says you could be union. Yeah, isn't that interesting? I hope that gets out to somebody who would know that. I think that's really cool that they're willing to do that. Poll results. Minnesotans don't want our capital paid for. They just don't, guys. They want competition. They want an even playing field. Let's just try once. Let's do something for just the normal guy that's out here in Minnesota. I just when I talk about this, yeah, I get compassionate. I get very passionate about it because I look at it and I'm thinking, whoa, why is it? Last but not least, and we'll get on with whatever I guess we're going to do here. I hope that people, when you're sitting back tonight, however you vote, when you drive home, you know that every single person that came up to you yesterday or today that wanted $1 million or wanted $5 million or wanted $25 million for a Viking stadium, you said, no, we can't do that. Yeah, we just can't do that in Minnesota right now. The time isn't ripe. I know you guys have been pushing this thing around here for 10, 12 years and haven't had any luck, but time isn't ripe. And all I'm going to tell you, committee members, and I will tell the state of Minnesota, Minnesotans are coming. We're organized. We're grassroots. We're websiting it. We're doing it. We're getting money in. We're coming. And by that, I mean we have to have, I guess, 90%. The taxpayers in this state that say, you know something? This is the thing to do. I hope that you see fit to cast a good vote and we can get on with doing some things that are right by Minnesotans. And if there's ever any questions you want, we'll surely stick around here. And if I don't know the answer, I don't know. We'll ask somebody higher up to answer it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Day. Senator Sparks, you've used 30 minutes. Did you want to call anyone else up?
No, you're Madam Chair. That's the end of our witnesses. Testifiers. Thank you very much.
That would
much
be the end? Okay.
Yep, thank you.
We will then proceed to hear from people who are opposed to the proposal. And I believe members have a list. Starting with... maybe we could have three at a time up there. And we'll start with Ms. Winfrey, the president of the Tribal Council of Prairie Island Sioux Community. And Mr. Johnny Johnson. And Ms. Annette Meeks, if you'd like to come up and sit at the table too, then we'll go in order. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Winfrey, and the time for the opponents starts now.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Vicki Winfrey, President of the Prairie Island Indian Community Tribal Council. The Prairie Island Indian Community owns and operates Treasure Island Resort and Casino, which is located just north of Red Wing. We are the largest employer in Goodhue County, employing more than 600 tribal and non-tribal members, and generating more than $13 million in annual state and federal taxes. The Prairie Island Indian Community opposes this bill, which claims to be a jobs, family, economic development, and rural Minnesota cure-all. Supporters say everyone will win with Racino slots. There's an old saying that committee members might be wise to remember when the Racino bill... with this Racino bill, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is. As owners of a successful gaming operation, we know firsthand the difficulties of operating a business that is dependent upon disposable income, especially in this economy. Gaming is not immune from this economic downturn. Minnesota's tribal casinos have felt that economic pinch just like other forms of gaming in Minnesota, such as the horse tracks. And other states have turned to gaming with high hopes of using gaming revenues to solve their economic woes and learning that hard lesson too. Consider these examples. Ohio, a state with more than twice Minnesota's population, was counting on revenue of nearly $300 million from the first year of a new video-based casino game to raise money for the K-12 budget, but according to published reports, they've realized only 15% of that amount, far short of the promises that were made to the education system. Sorry. Kansas approved state casinos in 2007 with a promise that $200 million from their proceeds would be used for such causes as property tax relief and infrastructure improvements. 3 years have passed, and private casino developers have dropped plans for three of the four casinos. Maryland had a similar experience in 2008 when only one of the six proposed casinos even drew a bid from the developers. Finally, 2 years ago, the state of Illinois decided to sell an additional casino license to balance its 2009 budget. According to published reports, lawmakers conservatively estimated that the license would net the state $575 million. The winning bid came in at one-fifth that amount. At the same time, annual tax revenue from the state's nine existing casinos dropped by one-third. These states all placed their hopes on casino gaming to fix their budgets, and in each case, they came away disappointed and far short of their projections. Bill supporters are promising tens of millions for everything from education to a new Viking stadium. Why should we expect Minnesota to be any different from these other states? I offer these examples not as a prediction or hope that Minnesota will suffer the same fate should lawmakers decide to authorize this expansion of gaming. Rather, I offer them, in the spirit of another wise saying, those who fail to learn from history are doomed to repeat it. Minnesota already has a jobs, family, economic development, and rural Minnesota initiative that works. It's called Tribal Gaming, Tribal Government Gaming, and it's benefiting Minnesota, especially rural communities. The collective impact of tribal gaming and tribal investment in rural Minnesota is $1.5 billion in economic activity, more than 30,000 jobs, and nearly $900 million in family income. That investment in rural Minnesota and many of those jobs would suffer under this proposed bill. Madam Chair and members, I encourage you to remember the positive impact that tribal gaming already has in Minnesota and reject the promises that appear too good to be true. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Winfrey. Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Johnny Johnson, member of the Prairie Island Tribal Council. I'd like to read a letter of support from the mayor of the great city of Hastings, Paul Hicks. Dear legislators, as mayor of Hastings, I have serious concern about the impact a gambling expansion would have on our region. Set along the Mississippi, St. Croix, and Vermilion River, Hastings is a scenic river town steeped in tradition. The Prairie Island Indian community, prominent business, Treasure Island Resort and Casino, have made a significant contribution to Hastings and the region. The community provides more than 1,600 well-paid jobs. In addition, economic impact studies have indicated that more than 200 new businesses have been created in our region to support the operation of the casino. More than 7.5 million visitors come to Treasure Island Resort and Casino annually, a major benefit to our local economy. We are grateful for the significant charitable contribution the Prairie Island Indian community has made to civic and community organizations, having donated more than $16 million over the past 16 years to organizations across our region and the state. As you consider the proposal before you today, please be clear about the consequences. Expanding gambling will simply shift economic activity and jobs from one region to another, from one business to another, greatly harming the economic activities in the Hastings area and very likely leading to a significant job loss in our community. We encourage our lawmakers to keep the need of rural Minnesota front and center, in particular in these trying economic times. Sincerely, Paul Hicks, Mayor of Hastings. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Ms. Meeks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good evening, Chairman Rest and members. My name is Annette Meeks, and I'm CEO of the Freedom Foundation of Minnesota, a nonprofit educational organization. I'm also a board member of Citizens Against Gambling Expansion. I appear before you tonight to share with you information about the problems of state government gambling on racinos as a method of balancing our state budget. Contrary to what you've been told by those who propose racinos, slot machines at racetracks don't create easy money. Frankly, more gambling creates only one sure thing, more problem or more compulsive gamblers in our state. Proximity and availability are everything to creating problem gamblers. Experts in addictive behavior estimate that between 1 and 3% of gamblers become problem gamblers. Some treatment specialists say that highly addictive forms of gambling, like slot machines, that number can fall victim to addictive behavior can be as high as 5%. In Oklahoma, a gambling expert recently testified before their legislature that since that state introduced slot machines 5 years ago, nearly 80% of their first call for help telephone line involve individuals with slot machine gambling addictions. Most disturbing, however, is a study conducted by our very own Mayo Clinic, which reported in 1970 the average age of those treated for gambling addiction was between ages 30 and 55. Makes a lot of sense when you think about it. Back in 1970, you had to get to Las Vegas to gamble. Today, however, the Mayo Clinic reports that as of 1990, the average age range is between 17 and 70 of problem gamblers. The proliferation of gambling throughout our countryside has turned our youngest and our oldest citizens into gambling addicts. It's safe to say that everybody in this room has 100 friends or family members. Think about this tonight as you drive home. If you vote to add slots to Minnesota racetracks, you've decided that 3 to 5% of your friends, 3 to 5 of your friends, will become addicts. You're considering adding slot machines to Canterbury Park and Running Aces Racetrack because you're staring at a very large budget deficit in the face. Each of you knows very well Minnesota is not alone in solving a budget shortfall. According to estimates from NCSL, we're not alone swimming in a sea of red ink. Only 7 states report no current budget deficits, while other states are facing some staggering numbers. Much of this revenue shortfall is due to a prolonged and deep recession, and for many years, economists thought the gambling revenue was recession-proof, that despite good times and bad, Americans would continue to gamble, thus providing a relatively stable source of additional income. However, this long recession and the proliferation of various types of gambling across the country have taught us another lesson. Gambling interests suffer almost as much as any other industry during tough economic times. According to a recent article in the Lexington, Kentucky Herald Leader newspaper, and I quote, many gambling experts and state officials warn against more states leaping into the racino business right now, close quote. The primary reason for this is the underperformance of racinos that have opened in other states during this prolonged economic recession. In Indiana, several casinos are in bankruptcy or limping towards it, while both of the year-old racinos struggle with financial problems. For all of their money, racinos bring a fresh set of problems, said the article. According to NCSL, quote, more than half the states have considered gambling legislation this year, including 8 racino states that sought to further expand gambling or give financial breaks to the racino industry. That isn't the sign of a healthy industry. The Indiana legislature, remember the ones who just authorized racinos 2 years ago, they opened them 1 year later. According to a newspaper account, quote, the first coin had barely dropped into a slot machine before the racinos returned to the statehouse to lobby for better terms, close quote. And interestingly, racino advocates in Minnesota continue to push this agenda now by saying it will create jobs or help erase our budget deficit. Most other states that authorize racinos do so by the state selling gambling licensing fees to those corporations who seek to operate the casinos. In most instances, that's the only proceeds that the state captures immediately after authorizing racinos. The rest of the taxes aren't realized until at least 1 year after the legislation becomes law, thus having little or no effect upon our current budget problems. An editorial writer in a state hemorrhaging red ink like Minnesota suggested that perhaps a solution to their state's current revenue problems and declining gambling revenue would be for the state to buy a Powerball ticket, where the odds of winning the grand prize are 1 in 195 million. And I'll leave you today with that thought. Those are about the same odds as Minnesota winning by adding slot machines to our racetracks. Thank you.
Ms. Meeks, the next three are Angela Hikes, Tom Pritchard, and John McCarthy. And Ms. Meeks had a handout for us, is that correct?
Yes.
Welcome to the committee, if you'd like to begin. If you could identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Angela Hikis, and I am the Vice President of Gaming Planning and Analysis for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe's Corporate Commission. Thank you for your time this evening. We are responsible for the operations of Grand Casino Hinckley in Hinckley, Minnesota, and Grand Casino Mille Lacs in Onamia, Minnesota. These are rural Minnesota communities that we are proud to call home in the places of our businesses. I'm here today to express our opposition to the bill that you are considering in front of you, expansion of gaming at Running Aces and also at Canterbury Park. And what I would like to focus my testimony on is impact. The impact that the bill that you are considering in front of you and the impact that that bill has on Grand Casino Hinckley and Grand Casino Mille Lacs, but then subsequently the impacts that it has to the communities in which we are operating, rural Minnesota, and then also to the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. You may first believe that because we are located well north of the Twin Cities metro area, that there is not an impact on the addition of slot machines or expanded gaming in the Twin Cities metro area. And I want to talk to you that that is not the case. The Twin Cities metro area is the heart of the gaming market in terms of where we attract our visitation and we attract our guests to our particular properties. We currently derive nearly 45% of our known gamers out of the Twin Cities metropolitan area. Our ability to understand our market area and to understand our customer base obviously comes from the fact that we've been operating in the market for a long time. But we have customer loyalty programs, we do market studies, customer lists, and data, and it gives a lot of very specific information to us. We understand what our market share is. We understand what the market share is in Minnesota. We know our demographic, we know our gaming activity, we know what people like to do, and other key relevant information that helps us kind of make business decisions. So certainly, given what is being discussed, we look at that and want to understand what does that mean to us. And I think the first thing that I'd like to talk about and convey is one of the things that we know is that Minnesota is a mature gaming market. You've heard before, gaming is not new in Minnesota. We are gaming at Indian casinos. We've got the state lottery. We've got cards at Running Aces in Canterbury. So it's not new. And it is mature. If you are a gamer and you want to game in the state, you are gaming today. What that means, then, is any new introduction of gaming, new casinos, new capacity, means that that particular market share has to come from somewhere else. And that market share is going to come at the expense of the existing operations in the state. We also understand what the current economic downturn has done to our businesses. We are not recession-proof, and we have not been able to kind of work through this economic downturn without impact. We have fewer guests. Those guests are coming with less frequency, and when those guests are coming, they have less disposable income in their pocket and less money to spend. We also understand that at this time, we are seeing a dramatic change and shift in the market. Casual visitation is really down for us nearly double digits at our particular facilities. So I think all of those put together really show you kind of a clear indication that additional business in the Twin Cities metropolitan area, kind of what that does for not only us but all of the operators that are operating in rural Minnesota. There's other factors. 53% of the adults living in Minnesota live in the seven-county metro area. So there is this significant customer base, significant demand that is coming out of the Twin Cities metro area where there's consideration of addition of gaming. And again, that is the heart of where our business comes from and certainly related impacts that I'm going to talk about. We are concerned about expansion, not only at Running Aces, but also at Canterbury Park. But one of the things that really is the greatest threat to us is the addition of gaming at Running Aces. This facility is located en route to Grand Casino Hinckley. It is 56 miles closer to the population center and essentially driving right by that particular facility today in order to get to our gaming facility in Hinckley. We've done some estimates of impact and kind of what we understand and what we know, and we are looking at impacts to our business dependent on the location of these facilities in the southern metro area. Could be as much as 20% in that facility, and then up to 40% in terms of the facility located at Running Aces. That strong impact is driven, again, and I want to say this again, that Minnesota is a mature market. Rather than attracting new gamers, we don't have necessarily people out there that are just going to decide tomorrow to start gaming, but they are going to come from existing gaming activity that's happening in the state, and we're going to see a shift of market share. gamer activity is highly transient. If you're a gamer, you kind of move around. You move around where you're looking for the latest marketing offer. You're chasing a perception of luck. You're going somewhere that has a more convenient kind of location. So that's kind of another influence and impact to what we're seeing. Also, I touched on it just a little bit, but location. Like any business, and if you're a business owner, location has critical influence on where you go and what you do and what your level of convenience is and which casino you choose. And I think it's clear that the location of these particular facilities are much more convenient in terms of what we're talking about for our facilities in outstate. There certainly is response to this as well. It's not just revenue impact that we're talking about, but it's the response that our operations are going to have to take. This really would mean a significant elevation of our marketing spend, further erosion of profit margins, and what we do in terms of responding to try to continue to drive business out of the Twin Cities metro area. And there's one thing that we cannot have a competitive advantage over, and that's location. There's nothing we can do to kind of mitigate that particular piece. The result, and essentially, you know, one of the things that I think is being talked about is we're talking about this transfer of benefit that has come to a rural economy. What we're talking about, that transference, just taking it from the rural economy and moving it to the metro economy. Really what we see as a result, it's fewer guests, it's lower revenues, and then all of that begins to kind of translate. It translates into fewer jobs, fewer employees. Employees that don't have access to health care. It's a reduction in the business that we do with vendors. It's a reduction in the economic development we've been able to bring to rural regions. And it's a harm to the local businesses that have grown out of the benefit that we've been able to bring to the rural economies. It's all real spending implications. You're hearing about benefits, but there are spending implications. There are tax implications. There are benefits that these particular business operations have brought to the rural economy, bring to the state. And that's what I really want you to be thinking about. There's really direct harm. There's direct harm to us. There's direct harm to everyone that we do business with. But just a few relational statistics. We employ 2,950 people, and 99% of those people live in rural Minnesota. 90% of our jobs are held by non-Indians. And the majority of those jobs are full-time jobs that offer health care benefits, 401k, paid time off, good jobs. Since we have opened our casinos, we're located in Mille Lacs County for our Grand Casino Mille Lacs operation, 30% or 35% increase in jobs. Pine County, where Grand Casino Hinckley is located, 70% increase in jobs in that particular county. We cover over 5,100 lives with our health insurance plans. And it's a level of coverage that historically was not the norm in rural Minnesota. So we have brought in those jobs and brought that related health care coverage. So we talk about all those things. It's staff reductions. It's these direct impacts. It's these people live in rural Minnesota. They have their homes there. They buy goods there, spending and service. And so those communities really just become less viable places to live. In addition to that, not only are we talking about kind of a job impact, but we do business with lots of people. 67% of the goods and services that we purchase come from vendors that are located in the state of Minnesota. 48% of those vendors are vendors that are located in rural Minnesota. So again, you can see this top line reduction just translates kind of all across in terms of way we've been able to help and fuel business in those communities. Volume and reductions, there were some comments made about we don't pay, there's no taxes, there's payroll taxes, there's property taxes. We pay all of those things. The impact, obviously, is going to be felt by dozens of businesses, and certainly there is an impact to the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. Our profit and revenue goes to the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe and what they have been able to do in terms of their communities, programs and services in the region for their members, education, housing benefits, health care, just a number of things that this economic opportunity brings to the Mille Lacs Band. So we're urging state leaders to consider not only the positive impacts, but to consider really the impacts that are happening on the rural community. These impacts, just like additional tax revenue, have burdens on, you know, you have to continue to reduce that number because of the impacts that this is going to have.
One of the things to remember is we have brought this development, we've brought this development to rural Minnesota without a single dollar of money from the state. And I think it's lots of development. It's great development that has happened for a number of people in those particular areas. I just want to wrap up by talking about and saying I think it's clear to see that existing casinos are not the only impacted entity. Expanding gaming in the metro area and across the state hurts entire regions of Minnesota. The consequences are far-reaching, and they represent a major economic hit to rural Minnesota. Again, there is lots of discussion about benefits, and I'm hopeful that I have highlighted that there are negative consequences. There are negative consequences to essentially this transference of benefits. So I think the real question becomes, how does a transference of economic benefit, job loss, from rural Minnesota and switching that into the metro economies really constitute any net gain for the state of Minnesota? The Mille Lacs Band, again, we strongly oppose gaming expansion and the job losses, far-reaching, and the damage that it will create in rural Minnesota, and I am hopeful that that will be part of your consideration when you're thinking about this bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Pritchard.
Yes, Madam Chair, my name is Tom Pritchard, President of the Minnesota Family Council, and we want to speak in opposition to the bill. And I guess I would say, to begin with, we would probably upset people on both sides of this issue because we don't support not only the expansion of gambling, but we oppose the existence of gambling in general today. And we feel that the problems which are highlighted by this effort to expand gambling are also present already. Regarding this legislation, we feel it's fundamentally wrong for the state to be targeting its citizens to engage in activities that victimize a significant number of people in the state, and that's gambling. Because what this legislation does is pretty much targets people in the state to gamble, to encourage them to gamble more. And we think that's not healthy and that's not good for the state. I think one thing this legislation will do is we believe it's fundamentally a tax increase. And what it's going to do is put the state more dependent on gambling, so it's going to lock in gambling in our state even more so than it is right now. And we're concerned about the costs, the social costs to the state and society from gambling. They're far greater than any economic benefits. There's a lot of talk about economic benefits, but I don't think we're looking at really the true costs. Conservative estimates are the social costs outweigh any economic benefits by 3-1. You've got addiction, bankruptcy, crime, corruption, domestic abuse, destruction of marriages and families, suicides. Suicide attempts among compulsive gamblers is higher than for any other addiction. Divorce rates for problem and pathological gamblers is 2 to 3 times higher than for non-gamblers. Gambling is the single fastest growing driver of bankruptcy. Researchers find that there's a statistically significant increase at the county level in the number of personal bankruptcies when casino gambling is opened. Compulsive gamblers are 3 to 5 times, have 3 to 5 times the rate of the general population for arrests. And the opening of a casino found that the crime grows over time. There's also the argument being made that this really is going to bring money into the state. But the studies I've seen show that 75% of the money that comes into a casino comes from within 35 miles of that casino. 95% of the revenues come from 75 miles of the casino. So really what this will do is just take money away from main streets. It's not going to bring new money into the state. As I mentioned, the social costs researchers in Pennsylvania in 2004 found that they estimated when they introduced slots there that it would generate $250 million for that state, but it also would create 75,000 pathological gamblers, costing the state $750 million. So we just don't see this as a way to go for the state. This is fundamentally a tax increase, and it really what it does is it targets the poorest, the least that can afford it. So we talk about all these benefits, but I don't think we're looking at the other side of the equation and the consequences that it is already having, but will even have more so in the future if we go down this way of expanding gambling. So with those comments, we just want to say we oppose this legislation.
Mr. McCarthy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John McCarthy. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Indian Gaming Association. Our association represents federally recognized tribes throughout the state of Minnesota, and the tribes are geographically located in mostly rural communities throughout the state. I'm here today to offer testimony on Senate File 2950 being proposed to the state legislature. The tribal government gaming operations throughout the state have made major contributions to the state economy, the tribal economies and local economies of most of the rural areas where they're located. In his testimony, Senator Sparks mentioned Pennsylvania and that they had recently allowed additional gambling on top of gambling that they just recently had approved. What he doesn't mention is why Governor Rendell did that was because the first time around, the projections were so far off they had to come back for a second hit. Although Senate File 2950 provides very little detail, we can make some assumptions based on what the proposal does reveal. According to the proponent's own numbers, we offer the following. Assume two tracks with 2,500 slots each, or a total of 5,000 slot machines. Gross annual revenue of both tracks is $365 million after prize payout. Where will Racino revenues go? Well, the state will get 34% or $125 million per year. 40% of that, 40% of the 34% will have to go to the Environmental Fund. Local governments will get 0.7% or $2.5 million. Track purses will get 6.5 or $23.7 million. Racetrack owners will get 58.4 or $213 million. Where will Racino revenues come from? The Minnesota gaming market is mature. Racino revenues will not be new money, but dollars shifted from other gambling activities and from other state gambling venues. Tribal casino revenues impact is estimated to be in excess of $300 million. The state share of lottery revenues could be reduced by millions. The state share of charitable gambling revenues could be reduced by millions. What does a $300 million loss mean to Minnesota tribes? 6,500 plus jobs, not only casino jobs, but tribal government jobs. They will be cut. $235 million in household income lost from Indian and non-Indian rural families. Significant cuts in casino and tribal government purchases from Minnesota vendors, which now total over $539 million and benefit more than 10,000 Minnesota businesses. Significant cuts in health care spending by tribes, which now totals $130 million, 88% of which is spent in rural Minnesota. Cancellation of new and planned capital investment or construction projects. Community sponsorship and philanthropic giving are greatly reduced or eliminated. Tribal government jobs, services, and programs will be cut. Healthcare, education, senior services, chemical dependency, law enforcement, social services, etc. They will all be at risk. What do these tribal cuts mean to rural communities? Revenue declines and staff cuts in the Main Street businesses that depend on these casinos. Migration of unemployed rural workers back to the metro area. State, federal, and local revenues fall while expenses like health care, unemployment compensation, and social services rise. The broader impact of gambling expansion on state revenue gains. Revenue gains, if any, will not offset the full economic cost. Prolonged deficit pressure will force further expansion, just as it did in Pennsylvania, of gambling, not just in the metro area, but statewide. Windfall profits earned by track owners will create intense demand for more privately owned gambling. The Minnesota landscape changes from destination gambling to neighborhood gambling with many casinos on every street corner. This proposal specifically doesn't address the issue of additional racinos or casinos being opened throughout the state of Minnesota, of which the state legislature will have no say. That will be done by the Racing Commission. In conclusion, Madam Chair and committee members, we believe the facts are clear. Expanding gambling will cost the state much more than it generates. Minnesota Indian tribes and rural communities will bear the brunt of the negative impacts from this major policy change. Once the expansion door is opened, there is no turning back. More and more gambling is inevitable. For these reasons, I ask you to vote against any proposal to expand gambling in any form here in Minnesota. Thank you for your time and attention. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. McCarthy. Senator Sparks, would you like to return to the table?
Madam Chair,
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if Mr. McCarthy could answer a question for me about
sure.
the idea
and,
that...
And the time of the testimony was... Was about was the same for the opponent. They spoke about 30 minutes, just to be on the record. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It has always been my understanding that the Racing Commission had just two licenses to give for racetracks, and you just said that soon we will have gambling on every corner. How I guess I don't understand how you arrived at that.
Mr. McCarthy.
Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, our position is that, well, first of all, I believe the Racing Commission has two licenses in the metro area. It says nothing about the outstate area. And secondly, as I pointed out, once the door is open, it doesn't close. Racino's starts the ball. The next phase could be slots in the bars, which is neighborhood gambling. And with the demand and the major change in public policy to allow private for-profit gambling in Minnesota, you're going to have a lot more demand from other people, other families, other individuals that are out there to say, where's mine? I need one too. And so it becomes kind of like a arms race.
Senator Roebling.
Well, Mr. McCarthy, I just heard all kinds of testimony saying about the decline, talking about the decline of gambling and that it's not nearly as profitable, and no one will want to get into it anymore in other states. And so I kind of do question, your statement that everybody is going to be requesting it. It will be requested if it's successful, but we have heard all this testimony saying unquestionably it won't be successful.
Madam Chair,
McCarthy.
Senator Roebling, I guess, Senator, there's no question, and I did not indicate that there won't be some money to be made here. There will be money to be made. What I'm putting forward, I guess, is the question of weighing off what the benefits are going to be versus the consequences. And I believe that the consequences will far outweigh the benefits. Now, that doesn't measure success or failure in terms of dollars. Will there be money made at these facilities? Sure there will. Will there be money made by other individuals who request it or neighborhood gambling? Sure there will. But at what cost? What are you going to pay for in the larger scope of the operation? That's the point I think we're trying to make here, is that we have a stable existing industry. No one is taking a look at what the damage that's going to cause or be caused to that industry. How many jobs are going to be lost? I believe if the state of Minnesota were to take a look at a similar industry in Minnesota, and there was some question about allowing a lot more of that, they would do a study. They would take a look at it. It's never been done. I don't believe that the gambling industry, the tribal gaming industry in Minnesota, has ever been given the credit that it deserves over the years for the huge benefits allowed for the economy of the state of Minnesota.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You indicated that the expansion of gambling in Minnesota would be a mistake. Can you guarantee me that we won't have an expansion from the tribes?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Roebling, this has been an issue that I think has gone back and forth for many years in terms of what is defined as expansion, okay? Senator Sparks mentioned, another testifier mentioned the number of new scratch-off games. That isn't an expansion of gambling. That simply is the lottery doing what it does. When the tribes build additional facilities such as golf courses and hotel rooms and RV parks, that isn't an expansion of gambling. That's a business growth that goes with it. So I think that there needs to be a clearer definition of what an expansion is. Will there be more? With the tribal casinos, there's a couple of things that are very constant. You know what they are, you know where they are. They won't go anywhere different from there. They're not going to move into another neighborhood because they can't. And because we made an agreement, and the tribes are more than satisfied with sticking with that agreement. Senator Day, and I've heard this for as many years as he's been promoting it, and he consistently talks about at midnight how many unknown trucks are unloading slot machines. Well, that just isn't the case. And nobody knows. That isn't the case. The Department of Public Safety knows. Every machine that comes into the state, the Department of Public Safety knows. And his assessment that they have increased from 8,000 four or five times, I don't remember what exactly he said. It just simply is not so. The number of machines has stabilized over the last several years to around 20 to 25,000 machines. This proposal here, at least for the initial part of it, would, I'm assuming, add another 5,000. Other racinos in Mankato, St. Cloud, Grand Rapids, wherever they may show up, you could double or triple those kinds of, that's expansion, in our opinion.
Madam Chair,
Senator Roebling.
Expansion in a different location is what you're saying is an expansion, but not on tribal lands. I'm kind of struggling because the proposal that we're looking at has what you would call an expansion just 3 miles away from a very large casino that has grown significantly since it began. In fact, I know, and they have been really successful, and I'm happy for their success. But, you know, it started out as a little six casino and then became a very large casino next door to it. And Little Six continued, and now Little Six was torn down, and or maybe not torn down, but converted into another business, and a new casino was built right next to that. And that was only a couple of years ago. And so, you know, expansion is in the eyes of the beholder, I guess. And I did have a question for Ms. Hykus, is it?
Hykus, yes.
You mentioned that it wouldn't be a good idea, or you were opposed to the idea that Running Aces could become a racino because it would catch about 45% of your traffic coming in from the Twin Cities. It would be a first stop. And I'm just wondering if you're asking us to provide you with a guarantee that you won't have competition. How is that different than if Cragen's Resort, for example, came here and said, we don't want you to allow any other resorts between the Twin Cities and us? I guess I'm struggling. We don't typically provide that kind of protection for any other industry, and I'm wondering why we should provide it for yours.
I guess my response
Ms.
to
Hykus.
That... Madam Chair, members of the committee, my response really to that question would be, I think it's unique in terms of the way Indian gaming functions in the state of Minnesota right now. We have very specific requirements in terms of where we can operate our facilities. We can operate our facilities on tribal land in our location in Hinckley, Minnesota, and also in Onemia, our Grand Casino Mille Lacs. So what is being considered here is really the addition of gaming in the Twin Cities metro market. It's not somewhere that we can go, and it is not somewhere that we can go and compete. So I guess what I'm talking about is, given those particular parameters and requirements of how we need to conduct our business, we don't have the same playing field in terms of a competitive perspective. And so that's, I guess, why we're highlighting where our location is, where we need to operate our particular facilities, and what that looks like if additional competition is allowed to go into the Twin Cities metropolitan market.
Any other questions for the witnesses? I think that at the time for testimony other than responding to questions has passed. Senator Perry.
Madam Chair. Ms. Hykus, explain to me why you don't feel that there would be a same playing field. I'm not quite following you there.
Sure. Ms. Hykus.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think the same playing field, again, goes back to the statements and the points that I made about where the population exists in Minnesota. There is significant population in the Twin Cities metropolitan area, significant population around and adjacent to where those particular casino operations would be located.
One of the key factors in gaming is location. It's convenience. It's where you live in proximity to that particular gaming destination. And I know there was some comments made about, you know, 50-mile concentric circles or 100-mile concentric circles in terms of where the majority of that business comes from. And I think it's clear in terms of the population base where we are in Hinckley and Onamia, and just given the landscape of gaming, we have some benefit today of being able to draw that activity out of the metro market. But that added competition in that area certainly gives people more places to go. It's more convenient. I can go there more frequently. And we certainly have demonstrated example in terms of what has happened with the addition of cards at Running Aces.
Senator Perry.
Madam Chair, I guess as a business and myself, I believe competition is great. I had a pizza place right down the street from mine. It makes me do better, and I pull the people in. But what I'm hearing here is three different things. I'm hearing a group saying how bad gambling is, and if that's the case, then we should abolish all gambling in the state of Minnesota. And I would think that if the tribal gaming and the Minnesota Lottery thought it was that bad, we could put a bill forth and get rid of all gambling in the state. What we're also hearing here is a group of citizens across our state telling us as legislators, 80% strong, that they want this. They would like to have this open. And I think part of what I have heard, and obviously everyone knows I'm the freshman senator that got elected at 27 degrees below zero, what I'm hearing from my constituents is they like Racino, most importantly, because dollars are going to the state. And I talked to one of the lobbyists from the tribal, and I gave him a suggestion. I said, this would probably all go away if tribal gaming would step up to the plate and say, hey, we'll do 20% here. We'll do 20% for this. But that hasn't happened. So I think part of the popularity of the Racino really is that when you go, if you so choose to go gamble, that you know those dollars that you're gambling are going for a worthy cause. And I don't believe anyone of the 80% thinks that opening up Racino is a cure-all to the budget problems of the state of Minnesota. The cure-all is to stop spending. They look at it as a way to have revenue coming in that's not taxation. And so it's kind of a balancing act. Where do you go? But I truly believe that we as legislators have to listen to our constituents. And if we don't listen to our constituents, they have a right, you know, when the time is right, to vote which way they want to go.
Are there any other questions for the witnesses? Thank you very much, Mr. Ricardo, Mr. Pritchard, Ms. Winfrey, Senator Sparks. As Senator Sparks is coming back, we will continue our discussion. I don't know if there are any amendments. I haven't been told that there are. However, we do have three members of the committee who are not here but who are presenting in other committees and who have asked to be called when we're ready to take a vote on the bill. So we may have, when the discussion is finished, we may have a pause while we quickly ask them to come. Senator Betzel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. During some of the testimony, there were some suggestions made that I understood to say that somehow legislators are being financially influenced on this issue. I'm not quite sure what was meant by that, but I can't think of any other issue in the time I've been here where legislators have been accused of being, if you will, bought off, being influenced in contributions or whatever. I think we have to understand that the legislature is a diverse group. There are people in here of all persuasions, of all kinds of beliefs, and some of it is most of it's just plain how we got here, the very core systems that we have. So somehow the people who have suggested that we're being influenced by money just simply isn't true. There's thousands of issues flying around this place. Why this one issue would stand out as being influenced by money, I don't get, but it is not true. I've noticed a number of emails that have shown up to her today. I've seen them on my BlackBerry. And a lot of them have been saying, vote for Rossino, save the Vikings. Please save the Vikings, vote for Rossino. Well, I've looked through the bill. I don't see the reference to the Minnesota Vikings Football Club anywhere in the bill. I do see a set of priorities that are listed, which may or may not be my own priorities and may or may not be the priorities of the legislature. But I think it would be rather presumptuous to say that even if this bill passed, that the 20% dedicated to athletic, recreation, and extracurricular facilities and programs and to stimulate capital improvements and employment, whatever piece that is, which by my math would be about $25 million a year, is going to go entirely to the Minnesota Vikings, which would still be way short of the money that they would need for their stadium. I'm quite familiar with the Viking stadium issue. I carried the bill that would have built a stadium in Anoka County. That building would be there today. They would have played this past season in it had not the Vikings walked away from it. But that's what happened. Now, so I don't see, first of all, that these are our priorities, and I don't see how this bill necessarily says that pass Rossino equals save the Vikings. I don't get it. Maybe there is some email campaign going out, you know, saying that, but I think that people have some false hopes and expectations here. I certainly would like to make sure the Vikings stay in Minnesota, but the Vikings have not yet come up with any kind of a proposal, and I don't know if they'd go with this one. I don't know how the National Football League feels about tying building a stadium to gambling revenues. I don't know that. I'm not sure, although it was asked of one of the witnesses, why, you know, about expansion of gambling. Well, if the state wanted to go in this direction, why should we select Canterbury Downs and Running Aces as the place to put slot machines? You know, I wasn't in the legislature when Canterbury Downs first came about, but horse racing was going to be a great sport in the state of Minnesota. And once it got approved, well, then they needed infrastructure and roads and sewers to make it work, and then it wasn't working, so then they had to come to the legislature, and they wanted off-track betting, and then that wasn't working. Then they wanted the card clubs, and then they wanted the expansion of car clubs. It just has not ended. I mean, this great horse racing boom that was supposed to happen hasn't happened, and at some point we're just going to have presumably a casino and horse racing on the side. But again, why should we have to have it at Canterbury Downs Running Aces? Senator Tomasoni's had his proposals in here to put slot machines in bars. And I think the proposal would come forward if this were to be approved, saying, why not us? If you've been in the state of South Dakota, virtually every strip mall you go to in South Dakota has a mini casino. You can walk into a laundromat. There's slot machines. There's gas stations. I mean, they're everywhere. So, again, why would be located at Canterbury Downs or Running Aces when we can put them everywhere? If a couple of slot machines are good, hundreds of thousands of them would be better. But I don't think that math works out. So I don't quite get it. Anyway, that's what I've got to say, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I guess I'm duly elected to answer.
I'm sorry, Mr. Day. We have finished the public testimony. If there is a question for you.
No, I was going to answer his
question. If we have a question for you, we will call upon you. But I don't believe Senator Betzel was asking you a question.
Madam Chair, who was he asking the question?
He was making a statement as a member of this committee, Mr. Day.
Okay.
But he certainly is free to ask you a question. I don't mean to say that. Just as Senator Roebling questioned the opponents.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling, would you like to question?
I would like to ask Mr. Day a question. Mr. Day, why
why Canterbury? Why Running Aces? Why would we choose them over spreading this out throughout the state of Minnesota?
Senator Roebling,
Mr.
Madam
Day.
Chair, Senator Roebling, thank you for asking me the question. I appreciate that. Expansion of gambling, you know, we already said it went from 8,000 to 24,000, and people don't think that's expansion. I just got an email while I was sitting over there, my guy that works with me, and he says, why don't you ask him about next to the buffet table at Mystic Lake, where they have a whole room of slot machines that they're going to unveil in the next week. Now, that's an expansion of gambling, but anyway. You have to have live racing. And we, of course, are lifting more dates up at Canterbury Park. It will help horse racing because we'll have purses. So instead of having 50-some days of racing, we can have 75 days of racing. So we have to have the venues that have live racing, and there's only two. And we well know that it's pretty difficult, as you can see, they're having a very, very difficult time to make it now. So I don't think you're going to have to worry about somebody popping up with another Racino. And you can be in Hinckley and you can be in Garrison and you can expand all you want and everything is fine, even though there's no taxes coming into the state. You can just keep expanding, and that's great. But if you have one Racino, and by the way, it's 3,000 machines, Senator Roebling, not 5,000 or whatever they just said. It's 1,500 at each location. So it's interesting that you can expand all you want when you don't have to pay any taxes, but the person that pays taxes, runs a racing facility, hires hundreds and hundreds of people, and has to do all these things, and then they're competing, and they get shot down because... I don't know. I don't understand it very well, but I'm catching on as I go along.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roebling.
You know, when we talk about economic development, it's one of the reasons I'm on this bill is because I believe that the Canterbury is a valuable facility in my community. And they have generated jobs and they have generated revenue. And I am worried about their future existence. And I know that when they have competition just to the south of us in Iowa where people can trailer up their horses and head out of town, that it may not be long and we will have an empty facility sitting there. And that will not be good for my communities. And so I know that they talked a lot about economic development around the existing casinos, and it applies to this one that we're talking about today, too, or these two. So I just don't want that to be lost. I know they're saying some of this will be shifted, and I don't know if that's true or not. I think that there are some people who maybe aren't even gambling at all right now who might choose to go to Canterbury, not because they are addicted to it, but because it's just a different entertainment attraction for them, and they want to take their entertainment dollars and spend it there. And it is a good place for entertainment. I enjoy going there a couple times a year to watch the horses race, and a lot of people do. This would just be one more thing that they could participate in while they were there doing that. And, you know, as far as the proximity to the other tribal casino in my district, I think that they'll become a joint attraction and that they'll both benefit, like having Burger King and McDonald located across the street from each other in so many communities.
Madam Chair and
Is
Senator
other,
Roebling.
Senator, you? Mr. Day, please. We can't have a...
Well, I was going to answer... Madam Chair, I was just going to answer her question really quick.
Mr. Day.
Senator Roebling, you're right on. People go to Las Vegas because there's more than one casino. They don't go to Wendover or some place where there's Jack's one casino. And as you should probably know, so there's two of them. Mystic Lake would gain people. Mystic Lake would gain people. And it's a well-known fact. If you have two locations, like you're buying cars whatever you're doing. The other thing to keep in mind for everybody here, Mystic Lake is the largest. They got more slot machines, and if they want to counter what I'm saying, than any place in the United States. You talk about expansion of gambling. They have more slot machines than any other casino in the United States, Atlantic City, Las Vegas, wherever. This expansion stuff is just.
Is there further discussion by members? Senator Gemsings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank Senator Sparks for bringing this bill forward because I think the winds are changing. Now, I know certainly in the community that I live in, as I have gotten emails and had discussions in the community, people that 4 years ago would have never talked about the potential of having an expansion, if you will, of gambling and having racinos are now talking about it. And you know, I think that we have to have this discussion, and I think it's a good discussion that we've had here this evening. And again, I'd like to thank Senator Sparks and all the testifiers on both sides of this issue. You know, I think we've learned a lot here tonight. There's one thing that I would like to have Senator Sparks clear up for me, though. Mr. McCarthy mentioned that 34% of the revenues from this expansion would go to the Environmental Trust Fund. Is that correct? I guess I didn't understand that. You know, 34% of that $125 million would be going to the trust fund.
Senator Sparks, from your revenue estimates.
Madam Chair and members, I don't know that it went to the Environmental Trust Fund. It was my understanding that that $125 million would be distributed between the five areas that we spoke of earlier. So I don't know where he came up with that, or I'm not able to answer it at this time.
Senator Gimsey?
Madam Chair, my understanding was is that the trust fund money was going to be lottery money. So just to be clear, 34% of the money that would go to the state doesn't actually go to the Environmental Trust Fund. As far as the expansion of gambling, Madam Chair, I remember the discussions surrounding the first casinos, Jackpot Junction Casino, and I believe there was one other, and how that was started out as bingo facilities. People could go there and play a simple game of playing bingo. The tribes came back and said, well, really, blackjack is a bingo game. It's a three-card game. We're going to call it 21 Bingo. And then it went from there to the addition of slots, additional card games, video poker, you know, and they have significantly, and I don't think anybody can deny it, expanded gambling in the state of Minnesota, along with the state, of course, through the lottery. You know, the newly introduced game of Mega Millions is, you could say, an expansion of the lottery in the state of Minnesota. So we have expanded gambling here in this state to a huge degree, and this continuation, it seems to me, to put slot machines in already existing facilities to help our agriculture community through the horse racing and the promotion of that, bigger purses, it just seems to me that the place that we should go, certainly in an agricultural state like the state of Minnesota, and you know, I would suggest that while this has been a very good discussion, that I guess I would say that I support Senator Sparks' bill.
I'm not aware of it, but does anyone have any amendments to the bill? If you do, I think they should be offered now. And Senator Sparks, you didn't have any, is that correct?
Madam Chair. Okay. Madam Chair, can I just make a few remarks?
Could we just take a question or comment from Senator Olsen, and then we can wrap up with your comments, and then we'll move to a vote. Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Sparks, Senator Betzel made a point about the Vikings, and I'm looking on this spreadsheet from the Racino group about the breakdown for athletic facilities, 20% at $25 million, $25.5 million a year. I think Senator Betzel made a pretty good observation there, because my understanding, if there's any debt service on the bonds on the Viking Stadium, it would probably be about $40 million a year. So can we get that one clarified? Because that would only be a little over half of that debt service.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Olsen. And I think that this bill was just an initial idea to throw out there, obviously, as it works through the legislative process. So that's something that we can work on. And you're absolutely right. Currently, there's $25 million that could go towards the bonds to pay down on a Viking Stadium. But if that's something the committee decides that they'd like to do, there's another $25 million in the general fund, and you could certainly move that together, and you'd have the $50 million to easily service the debt. And if you'd like to make that amendment right now, you could certainly do that, Senator.
Is there further discussion? Senator Sparks, you wanted to make some comments.
Madam Chair, yes, thank you very much. And again, I just really appreciate you taking the opportunity to listen to this. I listened very carefully to both sides of the debate tonight, and I do need to clarify something. I don't think that this is an issue that's a Democratic issue or Republican issue or an independent issue. I think that that was alluded to earlier, not in my testimony, but when this has been brought up on the Senate floor before, there's been Democrats that have supported it, and there's been Republicans, so I need to make sure that that's clear. Obviously, I'm a rural legislator, and I understand very well what's happening in rural Minnesota, and I don't want to do anything to hurt the existing casinos. In fact, in my opening remarks, I never mentioned the Indian tribal casinos. In fact, I don't think we need to turn it into us against them. In fact, I'm a big fan. I've spent many days at Treasure Island. I think that each of the casinos offers their own individual ideas. If you want to go to Treasure Island and enjoy the Mississippi River and their entertainment, you certainly are going to continue to do that. If you want to go to Mystic Lake, I go there quite often and see my good friend Robbie V entertain. I think people are still going to do that. If you're heading up north and you go to Grand Casino in Hinckley, they have the campground there. They have some other ideas and other things that people enjoy. Black Bear Casino, I've spent time there. Obviously, up in Tower, you have Fortune Bay with a beautiful golf course. Each of them have their own individual identities, and I don't think by adding two more Racinos on a permanent location is going to affect them as terribly as they think. I know that we heard Mr. Pritchard talk about the social costs, and we can debate that, but I think as we all know, we're going through some long evenings here, and we're trying to cut $1 billion out of our budget. And so what are the social costs when we try to put those bills together that cut health and human services, that cut education, that cut veterans? The list goes on and on. So I just I really appreciate you taking the time, Madam Chair. I know that this bill has a lot of interest, obviously, by the folks that are here tonight, and I appreciate discussion, but I learned very early on that you need to count around this this place, too, and obviously it'll be up to the committee, but I would request if there's a member that would make a motion to lay the bill on the table, I would request that, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.